Hello and welcome to Off the Bench. It's been a blistering start to the double game week. Big wins for single game week teams like City and Arsenal, but double game week players all delivering too, like Newcastle, Brighton, and even West Ham. This week, you're joined by myself, Az, and Andy from Fantasy Football Scout. Andy, how are you?
I'm very good, mate. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm having a decent game week for a change. I've gone up 100,000 places, up to the lofty heights of 271,000, 80 points, but took a hit, so technically 76, but 13 players left to play at the time of recording. So I am hopeful of a decent green arrow for a change. For once in my season, I might actually have a good game week. How are you getting on?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm on about 79. I took a hit as well. The hit hasn't come off yet, but hopefully it will by the end with all the double game weeks still to come. I have gone from around 70k to around 45k, so I'm quite happy with that. So yeah, if I can stay within the top 50k by the end of this week, I think I've done all right. But yeah, I did captain Matoma over Rashford, and that could still come back to haunt me yet. So we'll see how it goes.
It's been, I think, like a lot of us predicted, it's been a bit of a polarizing week, hasn't it? I've seen some scores of from some people down in kind of the 30s who maybe didn't invest too heavily in the double game week. I've seen some, you know, up in the 90s as well. And obviously there's a lot of games left to play. So we kind of thought this would be a bit of a season defining week, and it looks like it's on course to do that. And the next few days are going to be absolutely crucial. So nervy times.
Double game weeks can be like this though, can't they? Like this happened before with Brighton, where they didn't perform in the first game and then they did in the second game, same with Brentford. Whereas this time around, obviously United's really tough fixture was against Newcastle and they've gone through that and lost 2-0, but then they've got a nice fixture coming up next. So everybody that's kind of, you know, looking at things and it's looking a bit sad at the moment, it could turn very quickly on Tuesday or Wednesday night.
Yep. We talk about hits. I mean, my hit, I took Saka out for Madison. Obviously, I had no idea that there was going to be a benching coming. I was pretty nervous about it going into a home game against Leeds, but you know he missed out, and Madison blanked. Okay, but he's got another game to play. But let's start with Arsenal. Another big win for them. Didn't need Saka in the end. Won that game 4-1. Do you have Saka? What are your thoughts when you saw him on the bench?
Yeah, I kept Saka. So I did see late on that he might be benched, and I just kept him because I thought, you know what? I've loved owning Saka this season and I want him moving forward anyway. And I wanted to keep that option open of maybe not using my free hit in game week 32, which meant keeping Saka was a good option. I also didn't massively fancy moving to someone like Bruno this week and then not being able to get Haaland back. That was really big on my thoughts, was don't use up all those funds and then have to do major surgery next week to get Haaland back. So I kept Saka. Arsenal looked great again. Really gutted they didn't keep their clean sheet. It was a really unlucky goal to concede as well. I had Zinchenko. I think a few people kept an Arsenal defender, but quite a few people sold as well. The biggest thing for me when I was looking at them, although he only played 59 minutes, was Jesus being back. Two goals, took the penalty, but that's because Saka wasn't on the pitch. But he could be somebody that was so highly owned beforehand. The fact he's now a bit of a differential and he's going to be leading their line, as soon as he gets minutes under his belt and he's playing every time, he's definitely somebody we've got to look at again, isn't he?
He is. I mean, his ownership was what, 70% or something kind of early in the season? I think everyone, well, not everyone, but the vast majority of sort of FPL managers started the season with him. You know, and he got off to such a good start, didn't he? I mean, he got the 19 points against Leicester in game week two, which was great for everyone that had batted him. But then he kind of tailed off a bit, didn't he? I remember he was someone that was on kind of quite a few of our lists to maybe move out. But everyone was a bit worried, because you always worry when a player is that highly owned and you ship him out there, they're not going to deliver. But now he's come back. He's got the two goals against Leeds. The thing is, they were playing so well without him as well, with that Trossard and Martinelli link up, and trying to work out who the kind of best option is in that Arsenal lineup is quite difficult. Are you still on Saka despite that benching? Would he still be your pick?
Yeah, I think so. I think I saw a stat that said something like that was the first time he'd not been in the starting lineup in the Prem for 2.5 years. Yeah. So it was so unlucky for him not to have started that one. And it sounds like he was ill. It sounds like it was an illness that him and Ben White had, and it was right up till kickoff they were kind of saying, is he going to play or not? And they decided to bench him. I mean, they did well without him, which is good, but he's going to be straight back in there. He's their talisman, isn't he? On Jesus, I feel, although Arsenal have done really well without him, I feel like they've wanted him back so badly. They want somebody up top that is that kind of focal point, and they play so well with him in there as well. I feel like once he is back to full fitness, and he's pretty much there, I would have said, like he's going to be leading the line now until the end of the season, I would have thought. And the biggest thing is obviously Arsenal don't have double game weeks. They don't have lots of fixtures all piled together, he's not a bad shout, especially, you know, if Tony gets his book in and gets suspended, maybe that's where you look.
I mean, it's interesting with him and Arsenal in general, because they've got the game in 32. They've got a really good game in 32. So I think if you haven't got your free hit, for example, keeping the Arsenal players is that bit more attractive, because they've got Southampton at home in that week. It's just in 34, when we've got this double game week coming up, they've got Chelsea at home. Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about Chelsea a bit later in the pod and kind of work out what's going on with them. But it's not the best fixture. They've got Man City in 33. They've got Newcastle in 35, Brighton in 36. It's not a great run of fixtures for them. And so people who have ditched, you know, their defence, Zinchenko, Gabriel, you mentioned, people who have ditched Saka, it's that question of, do you bring them back for this run-in, I guess?
I think it's nice up to the blank game week, isn't it? Because they've got Liverpool away next, which obviously isn't the best, but then they've got West Ham away, and West Ham have two European fixtures bookending that Arsenal fixture. So you'd back Arsenal to do quite well, even though it's at West Ham. And then Southampton at home in the blank. But obviously, if people are free hitting in game week 32, they don't really have to worry about Arsenal. They can ditch Arsenal, and that's what people are doing. But I quite like the idea of keeping my options open and maybe getting through game week 32 without using the free hit. But as you say, in game week 33 and game week 34, they've got Man City away and Chelsea at home. And there's only 2 days rest between those two fixtures as well. So it's not looking overly nice after that. But, you know, it depends what your plans are. But I think the fact Jesus is back on our radar is nice, because we thought we had lots of striking options a couple of weeks ago, and they have dwindled off a little bit. So it's nice to have another one being put back in.
Yeah, we like to have options.
Yeah.
I think the attacker you can hold for now, but the defence, I think you've got to be looking at maybe shifting some of those defenders. I can't see too many clean sheets other than that 32 match, potentially West Ham, but always a tricky fixture, these London games.
They've been disappointed, actually, defensively. Like, they were so good defensively, stats-wise, before Christmas. And since Christmas, since the World Cup, they haven't been what I've wanted them to be. And unfortunately, the one that most people got rid of, because he was cheaper and we thought he might get rotated, was Ben White. And he's the one that's popped up with a few attacking returns somehow. So it's a tough one. I went with Zinchenko. I know people out there went with Gabriel as well. It's a tough one to hold on to them, considering they don't have any double game weeks. So I do kind of agree with you that ditching your Arsenal defenders and bringing in some other ones. The only problem is who do you really target? Because a lot of the teams that have double game weeks coming up, it's hard to know who you would kind of pivot to, if that makes sense.
I know. I mean, Liverpool seem like the obvious choice in terms of the games they've got, but there's not a lot of trust going into their players, is there? I mean, they've got Leeds in 31, Forest in 32 in that blank. They've got the double in 34, two home games as well. You know, Van Dijk, a Trent, a Robertson, but they're pricier than the Arsenal defenders.
Yeah.
And they're not delivering the clean sheets at all. So not easy.
And obviously you've got lots of kind of cheaper options, like someone like Tyrone Mings, who's done incredibly well so far. You've also got someone like John Stones at Man City. Yep. It could be an okay option, because he was playing quite far forward at the weekend as well. And I've always liked Stones in terms of in double game weeks. He seems to always pull a little goal out somewhere. So maybe that's somewhere you look at. But I think, you know, all of those players, you'd be looking at kind of either moving sideways or kind of downgrading from an Arsenal player. I think it's probably a good move.
Yep. Well, it's a nice segue into City, because they obviously had another great performance against Liverpool. Absolutely put them to the sword. Didn't need Haaland in the end. There was the kind of question marks around whether he would start or not after picking up that injury for Norway. He was in the stands going crazy when all the goals
were going in.
Watching his replacement Alvarez have an absolutely fantastic game. I mean, you know, there's City being a bit of a funny team fantasy-wise this season, because we've had Haaland, obviously, who's been incredible, but elsewhere we had Foden for a bit, but then he was kind of out of the team. We had Mahrez for a bit, but then he was out of the team. The defence has just been completely rotated, been a bit of a no-go. Some people went for Ederson as well, and he managed to keep conceding goals and not even getting any save points. But it does look like now, at a time when City are kind of getting back on the radar a bit, you know, we're expecting them to have a strong end to the season. We're seeing Stones come into it, playing in midfield, which is interesting. Grealish is now pretty much cemented down that left wing spot, and that's just put in a big performance. We've got Haaland as well coming back, and a lot of people have sold him. So suddenly we've got some options again to see.
We have. And actually, before we look at the other options, I think we need to talk about Haaland, because Haaland obviously didn't play against Liverpool. People sold him 2 weeks ago because he had a blank, and then he had a tough fixture against Liverpool. In my mind, we got very lucky there because they obviously destroyed Liverpool. There is an argument to say, did that happen because Haaland didn't play? I know that's a little thing that's going around at the moment, but if we just assumed he would probably have got at least one return in that fixture, is he somebody that we need to be getting back in straight away? Because he's got Southampton away up next. My transfer I had in my head was Tony to Haaland, easy, done. But I'm kind of second guessing myself a little bit now. Because if you look at it, I mean, I've got the fixtures up on here and how much time they've got rest in between those fixtures. From game week 30 to game week 35, they have either 2 days or 3 days rest between each fixture. They've got Southampton away, 2 days rest, then Bayern. Then they've got Leicester 3 days later. Then 3 days later, they got Bayern again. Then 2 days later, they got Sheffield United. Then 3 days later, they got Arsenal. 3 days later, they got Fulham. I don't see how much he's going to be playing in this, because he's going to play against Bayern. So, and then he's got a blank in 32, sorry. So I'm starting to think maybe it isn't as a no-brainer as it is getting him back in.
This is how I catch you up, Andy. It is. I mean, it's true. I mean, the worst thing that can happen, I think, is Pep gives us a vague kind of update in the press conference, right? You know, it gets to Friday and he says, yeah, well, Haaland, we'll have to see. We'll have to wait and see. Yeah. Something like that. Because it's pretty much the best fixture it could be. I mean, it would be better if it was at home, but an away match against Southampton and then straight into a home match against Leicester. It is a very, very worrying not having Haaland in those matches, especially because for me the move would be from Kane, who I know has been doing well. Ooh. But Kane with a difficult game against Brighton, it's nice to be able to say that as a Brighton fan, but it is. And you know, not owning Haaland in that Southampton game is going to be a big worry, especially if we get the vague update and we don't know whether he comes in. I mean, if Pep comes out and says he's fit, I'm bringing him back in.
Right,
there's no doubt about that. I mean, we talk about the minutes. I mean, he played 45 minutes against Villa in game week 23, but in every other game, right down to game week 15, he's played over 70 minutes in the matches. So we thought there'd be more rotation. Well, I thought there'd be more rotation anyway with him this season, with Alvarez there, with them going for Europe, with his kind of injury record, getting the little injuries and things, but he's played the majority of minutes when he's been available.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to miss out more then? Do you think they're going to kind of prioritise Europe and sort of put him on the sidelines a bit more?
That Leicester game, being completely sandwiched by those two Bayern fixtures, he's going to play in those games. And if it's home to Bayern and that's tight, he's going to play in the next game. He cannot play those three games within a week. I swear he can't, especially with Alvarez playing so well when he does play as well. I'd be really, really surprised if he does. And I don't think it's whether you should get Haaland or not. It's whether you should use those funds elsewhere. Like, for instance, you're going Kane to Haaland. Obviously, you don't have those funds to maybe upgrade a midfielder to, say, Salah. So it's whether you should be still getting Haaland when you consider he's got Southampton and Leicester and then a blank. How many fixtures or how many minutes are you going to be getting out of those next three game weeks?
Yeah.
But he did play Wolves not too long ago, played 60 minutes and got a hat trick. So he can do it.
Yeah.
But that's his only game where he scored more than a goal since the World Cup in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Obviously, he got 5 against Leipzig and he got 3 against Burnley. But there's more of a discussion to be had about it than there has been all season, really.
Do you think we are guilty? I mean, obviously we are guilty of overthinking things.
I know where you're going, but yes. Basically
we do overthink these things, don't we? I mean, yeah. City are chasing the league. They're still quite a way behind Arsenal. They need to keep the momentum going. Can he afford to rest him? I mean, it doesn't really help when Alvarez puts in the kind of performance that he did, because it's not like he's not playing Haaland and bringing in a 18-year-old from the academy. He's bringing in a World Cup winning striker to replace him. So there is kind of concerns there. Also, Haaland's away form in general this season hasn't been that amazing. Yeah. I mean, he's blanked in quite a few away games. You know, against Palace a few weeks ago, he just got the one goal and 6 points. I mean, he did have so many chances in that match. Against Forest, he only got 2 points. Mm. Arsenal, just one goal. You know, it's at home when he's really at his most devastating. So if you're following your lines, you think there's going to be rotation for that Leicester game, you could make the argument just to avoid him for the Southampton game. Hope he just gets the one goal
yeah,
if he plays and then gets rested. But It feels like he's asking a lot, doesn't it?
And that's not me saying you should avoid Haaland for the rest of the season. Obviously, this will be until after the blank game week, and then you could bring him in, you know, against Arsenal at home, and then he's got a double game week anyway in 34. It's just in these next 3 weeks, game week 30, 31, and 32, when he's got a blank in there anyway, but he's got two Bayern fixtures and he's got Arsenal the week after. So in the next 20 days, I can see him playing Bayern twice and playing Arsenal. But does that mean he gets rested against Southampton, Leicester? I could be completely wrong here, and I am still 80% sure I'm going to be bringing him in anyway. But it is something to think about, I think.
I think if we are to get a vague update or no concrete news that he's available,
yeah,
I think I could end up swerving him. Because the thing with Kane, although he's got this Brighton game, he's got Bournemouth.
This is where I catch you, Az. This is where I catch you.
Well, it's difficult. It's really difficult to know what to do with a player like that, isn't it? Because, you know, moving for a potentially injured player doesn't exactly scream point, does it? Even if it's hard, yeah. If it's Haaland or not, especially, you know, given that he's had these injury records and it's such a crucial time coming up. So if he's not fully fit, is Pep going to start him anyway, or is he going to give him a bit more time to be fully? Which anyway, this could all be a moot point anyway if we get a decent update from Pep.
Yeah, and I mean, say you did want to go with Haaland, or say you actually wanted to swerve him and you wanted to kind of go towards another Man City player. We mentioned him just then in Grealish, didn't we? Mm. Grealish seems to, like you said,
I like Grealish,
that.
You know?
Yeah, and obviously with Foden being out at the moment, it's cemented him even more. He's looking good. He scored a goal, got an assist at the weekend, and he's looking more integral to that team, isn't he? Everybody said second season with Grealish, and second season with any player that plays for Pep, really, that's when you start really understanding the system and really gelling into their team. It's looking like it's finally happening for him, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's got 11 attacking returns this season. I'd say for a player of Grealish's quality and playing in a team like City, I think the minimum should be around 20 for the season, something like mm-hmm. that. He's on course. He could get that. You know, he's what, like 9-10 games left, but he could get an attacking return each game. If he's going to get an attacking return each game, he's a player I probably want in my side. I mean, I like the fixtures as well. I like the Southampton game, Leicester. You know, they've got Fulham to play, West Ham, Leeds, Everton.
Yeah.
It's a better run than Arsenal have got, basically, until the end of the season. And I would be surprised to see City slip up too many times. And I think Grealish is the only player, attacking-wise, other than Haaland, that I'd consider.
Yeah, I think it's a nice shout. I think it's a nice one to go to, because I think with Champions League, Mahrez seems to be the kind of Champions League man, doesn't he? So I think Grealish has probably got that spot nailed now.
Mm.
As nailed as it could be in a Pep team, by the way, I should say. But I think it's a nice little kind of sideways move to go to somewhere like Grealish. It's just tough because those midfield spots are a real premium at the moment, aren't they?
That's it. I think you need to make the sacrifice of an Arsenal mid to do that. Or I mean, even potentially a Brighton
yes.
mid.
Yes, yeah.
Given they've got a blank in 32.
Yeah, and those fixtures aren't nice up till then either, are they? They've got Spurs away and Chelsea away, and then the blank in 32. So losing a Brighton mid, maybe not the worst thing at the moment.
I think it's worth keeping one. I mean, again, another. We're doing well with these segues because we can come on to Brighton.
I know we are.
we're coming to Brighton now. I mean, incredible game. Absolutely incredible match. I was watching the highlights and I felt like I just watched like an absolute blockbuster, and then it comes up at the top second half highlights. I was like, that was just the first half. It's like absolutely outrageous the number of chances both teams had. I mean, there's so many options at Brighton, you know, as has been talked about many times on this podcast. Two shots for all outfield players for Brighton, first time ever. And even Steele gets an assist, not even an outfield player, but still manages to register an assist. I mean, who's the best asset? They all look good, don't they, in midfield? All of McAllister, March, and Matoma. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, I think so. I think a couple of weeks ago, Matoma was top for me, and Matoma was top by quite a way as well. But I think he's dropped down a little bit. I think McAllister, for me, playing in that 10 role and being on penalties as well, it's just such a lovely player to own. You watch him and he does boss those games. He looked a little bit tired in the last game, but it sounds like he might be rested midweek this week.
Don't say but that, he's my captain.
Yeah, that's right. And then I think I'd put March next. March always impresses me. He does obviously like getting the assists, and his stats are always absolutely brilliant after every game as well. So I think I'd probably have McAllister top, then March, then Matoma.
Mm.
Matoma just seems to be dipping just a little bit in his stats. Fantastic player. And obviously, steal assist and that Matoma chip was just beautiful. And he's a lovely player to own. But I think if I were picking now, it would probably be McAllister and then March and then Matoma. You're the Brighton fan. Am I well off there?
four attacking returns in four for Mitoma does have the worst kind of underlying stats of the three players. The problem with, they've all got their kind of strengths, they've all got their kind of weaknesses. I mean, McAllister's strength is his stats are absolutely incredible and he's on penalties, but the weakness is he does look a bit tired. I think we could well see him miss out midweek, but also he can drop deep. He can drop back to that kind of eight role. And we saw that happening against Brentford when we kind of lose control a bit of the midfield. He's kind of the sacrifice to come back and start orchestrating things from a bit of a deep lying role, which isn't what you want to see from your, particularly from your captain, but any of your kind of assets. I do wonder as well with tricky fixtures to come with Spurs and Chelsea, whether we might see him playing a bit more withdrawn as well. I mean, March looks great. Stats absolutely brilliant in the kind of form of his life, but he still has that. He just has that tendency to dodge returns.
Yeah, assist to assist.
Like he's not the most, assist to assist. He's not the most clinical. There's a lovely cross for the goal.
For Welbeck.
At the weekend though. Yeah. And then you've got Mitoma, who I think is probably our best player, most talented player, most clinical player as well. But like you say, doesn't get as many chances as perhaps the other two get. So it's exciting. I love the fact there's so many options. I think we probably want to be looking at one of those, given the fixtures to come. If I was going to pick one, I'd stick with Mitoma. I'd go the opposite of you. He'd still be the one that I'd pick.
That's fair enough. And don't get me wrong, I've owned Mitoma for weeks now and I've absolutely loved it. And like you said, he's just consistently getting returns, which is brilliant. It's just, there's a few little signs for me that maybe it's not something that's going to keep going, if that makes sense. Like even the goal at the weekend, a steal assist straight through the entire team and then he chips it over the keeper. I don't know. That's not usually the thing I look for and go, ah, yeah, that's going to continue.
Absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, it was. Lovely players. It's just, especially with me thinking or wanting to keep the option open of not free hitting in 32, losing a Brighton midfielder now, keeping one, but losing a Brighton midfielder doesn't seem like the end of the world.
Mm. Yep. No, I disagree with that. I mean, Brentford as well played really well. You mentioned this kind of all these yellow cards that Tony is accumulating. It kind of puts us all a bit on edge because as soon as he gets his next one, he's going to be out for a couple of games and then he's going to be an easy sale. But another goal for him. Just generally, Brentford, they're finding ways to score goals, aren't they? And Bomo getting the assist, Janout starting to get goals. Pinnock has come up with a couple of goals when we all went for Henry or Ben Mee.
Yeah.
Typical.
Yeah.
But Raya as well with all the saves. I mean, they've got options as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they do have options. I think most people are going to start selling them soon because, you know, they don't have those double game weeks coming up and they're quite nice players to just move off of. It is worth saying as well that their home form compared to their away form is so drastically different. Like, that's why I said about Man United having an easier fixture for their second fixture in the double game week because it's Brentford at home and away from home they are a little bit poorer and they do kind of rely on those set pieces quite a lot. But at home, you know, they can do well against anybody. I think Tony, he reminds us so much of Diego Costa, doesn't he?
Yeah.
We're all waiting for that booking to come. And it might not come for four or five game weeks yet, but we're all worried about it. But the big thing is when it does happen, it's two game weeks out. Like that is the big thing. Like being out for two games is quite big. So yeah, he's going to be gone at some point. And I think a lot of people will be selling him this week. But if he does get booked midweek, he's such an easy sell then. And I think that's where people start moving to Haaland or maybe Jesus.
Yep, absolutely. Chelsea, let's move on to no clear segue onto those. But
just Chelsea?
Well, we can move on from Brighton and Potter and all that. I mean, Potter has now has now gone 7 months in charge. He was. I mean, what do you think that means for their players? Because they've really disappointed. I mean, especially Chilwell, right? I mean, he was so heavily bought when he came back. So much promise. 1 point in three games.
Yeah, I know. I think, I mean, this happens all the time with these Chelsea wing-backs, doesn't it? It happened with James for ages. They look so promising. Chilwell hit the post. He could have easily come away with a 15-pointer, but he comes away with 1 point in three games, like you said. I think Chilwell owners can count themselves unlucky. Personally, whenever you watch their games, he's so high up the pitch and he is like a left winger for them. So it's really tough because we don't know who's going to be coming in and whether they're going to favour a wing-back system. I think when you come into Chelsea and they've got Chilwell and James, I think you kind of have to go with a wing-back system really because they're two of their most effective players. But Chelsea are just going to continue being what they've been all season, is a bit of a gamble side if you really wanted to go for it. The upside is there potentially, but it's such a risk to know who's going to play because they've got about 50 players on their books. So it's a tough one to kind of work out.
Yeah, I mean, the trouble is that they're just not scoring goals, are they? That's the biggest problem. So, you know, I think the wing backs have kind of got that safety net of the clean sheets and then they're playing attacking as well. I mean, not getting many clean sheets either, but that's the kind of idea of it. Whereas if you're looking at like Sterling, for example, at what, 10, at 10 million?
Yeah.
Or if you're looking at, I don't know, Havertz at 7-6 and Felix, there was some investment in them for the double game week.
Yeah.
But, you know, these strikers, they've got to score. And do I suddenly see Chelsea starting to score a lot more goals? Not really.
Yeah.
Do I see them tightening up? Potentially. I just think that this season has been so rough for them and they don't really have anything to play for. They're not going to get Europe.
Yeah.
They're playing almost for a top half finish at the moment. So the motivation isn't really there. I think they're just a hard avoid for
me. I think so. And even keeper-wise, like you think Kepa could, you know, there's every possibility a new manager comes in and prefers Mendy, who's just sat there, been doing nothing for most of the season now. So they are a tough avoid, I think. Because like you said, they're just not scoring enough goals.
No.
So who do you invest in, really? But yeah, it's a tough one.
Credit to Villa, though. I mean, Ollie Watkins did the business for us, didn't I? Lots of investment in him going into the double. 8 points for him. He got the assist against Bournemouth. He's been on an incredible run. I mean, I think he's only blanked once since game week 21 or something like that.
Yeah, I think he scored 5 away games in a row now. And he's on penalties. You know, he's been a lovely asset to own and he's had a really good season so far. Also defensively, they're really turning heads with their defensive performances at the moment. And their defenders, people that went for, you know, a Mings or a Konsa or a Moreno, they're kind of reaping the rewards now because they seem to be that team, a bit like Burnley a couple of seasons ago, where if they keep a clean sheet, those defenders are getting the bonus points. And it seems to be happening quite a lot at the moment. So, you know, for those people that want to be maybe moving off a Arsenal defender, Villa players aren't the worst way to go.
Yeah, no double in 34. They do have the game in 32. Thing.
Yeah.
Brentford away. Okay game. I think Watkins is a you know, you hold him, don't you?
Yeah,
he's going to be a priority move to be moving out. Let's talk about Newcastle. Talk about your team, United. Poor performance from them.
Manchester United, that is. Yeah.
Sorry. Yes, I did get in trouble for saying that. Yeah, Manchester United.
Yeah.
Poor performance from them. Great performance from Newcastle United. 3-3 for Willock now. Isak impressing, but then Wilson coming off the bench to score. Defense finally getting a clean sheet again. Trippier just doing what Trippier's done all season. Going to break some records, I think, for points for a defender. Game in 32, no double. What's your thoughts on? Let's talk about Newcastle first. Invest or not?
Newcastle are a tough one. Every time I've wanted to invest in Newcastle, it's been in defence. So I've got Trippier, I've got Botman. I almost had Pope as well. I almost went for that kind of triple up. I think a lot of people would have gone to Isak if their double game week in 31 had have appeared, but obviously it didn't. I think Isak is a really interesting shout, especially if people, I know we've spoken already about maybe moving Tony out. I think a lot of people would have done it if they had that double. But even then, he's looked really impressive when he's played so far. Even though he didn't score against United, he was a real handful and he looked good. And they look like they're starting to play to his strengths a little bit as well. Like he's starting to gel into the team a little bit more. Obviously, you know, Callum Wilson's there in the background. He did come on and he scored as well against United. So it's a tough one to know where to invest in Newcastle. I don't think I'd go for Willock, even though he has done this before with them, hasn't he?
Where
he
had every game scores.
Late season flourish. But I think if it were me, Isak would be the one I'd probably be looking for because you probably have a defender already. But they do have that double coming up later on, but it's a long way off yet, isn't it? What about you? How do you feel about Newcastle? Obviously, stats-wise, they absolutely battered Manchester United, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I've got Trippier and Botman. When I first bought Botman, it was great. They were getting clean sheets every week. And then I went for quite a long period of conceding in quite a few games. And then it's nice that now I needed him for the double game week. He's come straight in with his first clean sheet in a while in the first game of the double game week. So that's nice. I don't love owning double defence. I mean, look at the Chelsea double. I've got Kepa and Chilwell, for example. When they concede, it's pretty brutal. So it's not my favourite thing to do. I look at the fixtures as well for Newcastle. You know, they've got, you know, difficult games on the horizon. Brentford away, Villa away. You know, they play Spurs. Okay, maybe that's not, maybe it's hard to know if that's a really difficult fixture or not at the moment. But they've also got Arsenal to come. They've got Chelsea, Brighton. It's a difficult run. I can see them conceding in quite a few of those games. And I'm just not sure I completely trust the attack because we have seen them struggling in attack this season. And the Isak and Wilson thing worries me. I think there's a rotation there. I don't like it when, if a team's struggling in attack, you know a change is going to be made. And that change, I think, could often be Isak out for Wilson around the 60-minute mark or something like that.
I think the investment they put into him, though, means he's going to have the minutes. That's the thing. Like, is he their record signing as well? I think he was bought for... I can't remember what it was now.
Gmirisch was quite a lot. Was he 60 million?
Something like that. So I think they're going to do everything they can to make sure he's in there. And Wilson's obviously a nice option to have to either bring on off the bench, whatever. And Wilson's never fit. That's the other thing. Like, you want to rely on Wilson, but you can't really. Isak on pens when he is playing, I don't know whether that would, you know, obviously Wilson came on at the weekend. If they were both playing at the same time, whether Isak would take precedent or you would have thought it was Wilson. But I actually quite like the Isak shout. I quite like it moving forward, but it's just the fact they don't have the double anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, the trouble with Isak is that he's played quite a lot of minutes. He hasn't exactly scored a huge amount of returns.
Yeah.
I mean, he got the 13 points against Forest and the goal against Wolves, but he blanked in the game against United. He's blanked in games against Bournemouth, against Palace, against, you know, Liverpool, City. Okay, they're tougher games. Do I think he's someone who can reliably get points every week? I still think the jury's out a little bit. I think he's a great player, a fantastic player for Newcastle, but it all comes down to getting those goals, doesn't it? And is he going to get enough between now and the end of the season with the fixtures they've got and with the rotation and things? I think he's probably in a void for me. Yeah. If you've got him, you keep him.
Well, speaking about a void, what about Manchester United then?
Oh, God. I know.
I mean, one thing I will say, and this is as a United fan as well,
and Manchester.
Yeah, Manchester United. As soon as we lose a game, that's it. Our season's done. Ten Hag isn't, you know, the best manager, all that stuff. But as soon as we win a game, we win a few, we're back. We've got the best players in the world. We are such a extreme team in terms of views. I will say this, that is Newcastle away is a really tricky fixture. We didn't have Casemiro. And against big teams, especially away from home, Manchester United struggle to get control of games, especially when they don't have Casemiro, who is integral to the way they play and kind of the way they want to play. It means that we just completely relied on the counter-attack, which you could see from about minute 20 onwards. That's all we were doing, was just trying to do counter-attacking, which is not what you want when you're a Fernandes owner, when you're a Rashford owner. Maybe as a Rashford owner, because obviously he's on the counter-attack. But it wasn't good in that game. That doesn't mean that I don't think Manchester United are good assets moving forward. They have the fixtures. They have the amount of fixtures as well. I think if you went for Bruno Fernandes or Rashford, whoever it is, you're still going to hold them moving forward because you didn't get them for this double game week. You got them moving forward, didn't you?
I'd be very worried if I was a FPL manager who had three United in their team.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Rashford's an easy hold. I think that's completely fine. But, you know, Everton put in a really good performance yesterday against Spurs. The pressing they were doing, we've seen United under, you know, substantial pressing really kind of fall apart. It's going to be interesting with them playing Brentford in the week because they're a high pressing team, and then against Everton as well. Then it's Forest away, tricky because Forest have got an incredible home form, fighting for their lives down there. Then it's a blanking 32. Then it's Spurs away.
That Forest game is sandwiched in between Sevilla home and away as well.
I don't love them. I mean, I've only got Rashford, and I'm not looking to buy any more United players for a while. I mean, I know they've got the double in 34 coming up against Villa and Brighton, but I think if you've got a sure Fernandes and Rashford, like a lot of people have got because of this double, I'd be a bit concerned personally.
Yeah, I've got Shaw and I've got Rashford. I didn't go for Bruno because I didn't actually fancy this double, which has turned out, you know, 50% of it's turned out right. But I think if you had them, like I said, you were thinking long term. And I don't see how one game against a really tough opposition like Newcastle away can change your thinking long term. Because otherwise, why were you bringing them in, if that makes sense? Like after that one fixture, I think they're going to do things to make you go, this is why I brought them in the next couple of weeks. But I do agree with you in terms of Everton at home. I still think Everton at home will be fine. I don't think it would be high scoring, but I think it'd be fine. Nottingham Forest away, I wouldn't expect a clean sheet because Forest seem to always score at home, but there should be some goals in that one as well. And then the double in 34 is quite nice too. Aston Villa at home, Brighton at home. There should be goals in both of those. So it's whether you want to get away from having three of the players and move a Fernandes to someone like a Salah, which I don't think would be an awful move either.
I think that the concern is when you have a result like an absolute humiliation like Liverpool gave them, the 7-0, you want to see a kind of reaction to it.
We didn't need to bring that up.
Well, all we've seen so far is a 0-0 draw with Southampton and then a really poor performance against Newcastle. And yes, Casemiro is missing and that's absolutely massive. But where's the reaction to that Liverpool match?
Yeah, it's tough because reactions can happen not just in the Premier League. Like you think the amount of games that they've had. I'm looking at this table with the fixtures in front of me and the amount of days where they only have 2 days or 3 days rest. Like it does catch up to a squad that's tiny as well. I say tiny in terms of quality, whereas you look at a team like Man City and obviously they can handle that. Whereas I think United sometimes struggle. You know, these players have been flogged as well. Like they're playing almost every game. Bruno plays pretty much every single game and he loves to drop deep when we lose control. So yeah, it's a tough one. I think players like Rashford, Bruno, Shaw, De Gea, they're going to play every game. That's the thing. So if you just fancy the quantity of fixtures, then you go with them. And they're going to have good games. This isn't the end of United season. They're going to still have good games going forward. So I don't think they're a panic sell. And they might even show you against Brentford at home, you know, that you don't need to be worried. Or they might do the opposite. We'll see.
it's going to be a really interesting game there because, you know, it was a big game, you know, early in the season, Brentford absolutely destroyed United. And there's going to be a sense of...
What's going on?
A bit of a theme, isn't it? But yeah, I think it's a big, big match for United that because not only have they got to kind of get over the demons of earlier in the season and that Liverpool match, they've also got to start picking up points or the top four might even be under a bit of jeopardy. So big game.
We'll see.
Your own team then. So what are you thinking transfer-wise? Haaland is going to dominate a lot of people's thoughts, isn't he?
Yeah, I think it's either going to be Tony to Haaland or I might roll. I might give myself an extra week to leave that option open of free hit or not in game week 32 because I'm still not sure as to what I'm going to do. But Tony to Haaland makes an awful lot of sense, especially if, as you say, we get update that says, yeah, Haaland's fit, he's going to play. I think it's going to be hard to ignore him then because he even comes into captaincy, you know, discussion then too. He's going to be over 100% EO, which makes you think, you know, you probably should be getting him. So that's my early thoughts. It's either going to be that or roll unless an injury happens, you know, midweek.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I'm in a similar, but I mean, I can't do Tony to Haaland. I don't have the money, so I'd have to sell Kane. So it would be Kane to Haaland if he's fit. If it's vague or if it's not, I don't think I'd do. I don't like to buy injured or semi-injured players. It's just, it's always a... I know we've seen players with like yellow flags score goals and Haaland could even play 20 minutes and get a big return. But I just aim to have a fully fit squad, you know, in my own team.
Yeah.
And at least Kane's going to play that 90, even though it's a tricky match. So I think if it's like 50-50, then I will probably avoid. If the scales tip towards Haaland starting a little bit more, or we start getting if he's training, for example, and Pep's being a bit vague, but we see him looking happy in training and, you know, pain-free and all that, then I'll probably just make that move. There's no one else really in my team that I'm too worried about. I haven't got Saka, which is a concern, but I've got Madison, who's got Bournemouth at home. And I did that move with this game in mind, hoping that Madison could at least match him in this match. And then obviously he's got the extra game with the double. So I've got no Arsenal attackers, which is a bit of a shame. So I'm hoping that Liverpool, you know, can at least have some decent home form and keep him out.
Say we're optimistic and we say Haaland could get 120 minutes against Southampton and Leicester.
Mm.
Kane is going to get 180 minutes against Brighton and then Bournemouth at home. That doesn't seem like a no-brainer move to
me, Kane Haaland. I'd rather have Haaland. Yeah.
Oh, don't know though. Bournemouth at home alone is like, it's a tough one. I think I'd be edging Kane personally. But then I'm going to have both. So, you know.
I've got the wild card to play as well. At some
have
point.
You?
Yeah, I didn't use it when kind of everyone else seemed
to. You keeping that for next season?
I might need it. Yeah, it's difficult to know exactly when to use that. I mean, I look at the players that I'd bring in on if I was to wild card this week, for example, and I don't think it'd be wholesale changes. So I think it could be something that I play next week, potentially. And that's when I might move for the likes of Grealish and Stones and target some of those players.
Is it just wild card you've got left?
And the free hit. So the free hit, and free hit in 32. Yeah, I'm kind of well set up to attack this run in.
I'm trying to unnerve you a bit.
I know. Well, I am unnerved. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to just get into the top 100K this season. That's the aim because it's been a brutal season.
You can personally. Do that. With those two chips left, yeah. You can definitely do that.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate that.
No worries. Captaincy?
Haaland, if I bring him in and think he's going to start. Otherwise, Rashford at home to Everton.
Oh, see, I'm currently, my bus team is on Watkins.
Oh, okay.
Home to Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, I don't mind that at all.
Yeah. whether it stays on that by the end of the week, I'm not sure. Because obviously, all of a sudden, we're going to start seeing everybody going Haaland, everybody going Rashford. So I'm at the moment, it's on Watkins. I do think he's in the kind of discussion as to who to captain this week. And he's in great form. So home to Nottingham Forest isn't awful. But I think if you do get Haaland in, yeah, it's going to be tough to not captain him. But then, like you said, away from home, is he? Yeah.
I think Rashford's the kind of obvious, and you can't see me because on the pod, but I'm doing the quote, the sarcastic quote marks.
Funny is.
Yeah, given that, you know, the form he's had and the fact he's at home and Everton in the position they're in. But like I said, I watched that game last night against Spurs and I was really impressed with Everton and the pressure they consistently put Spurs under. And I think if they can do that again against United, that's not going to be the walkover that a lot of people think
exactly. It
perhaps should be. And then that opens the door for potentially another captain like a Maddison maybe, or like a Watkins, or someone with a good home game.
Yeah,
not many people consider. Like, yep, me too.
Right, Az, thank you so much for coming on to the pod with me. Hope you enjoyed it.
It's been great. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, good. And thank you everybody for listening. Don't forget the FBL pod will be back on Thursday with an in-depth review of all the talking points ahead of game week 30. Good luck to you and your teams, and then listen out for another Off the Bench podcast once the dust has settled on next weekend's FBL action. Goodbye.
Thanks, everyone.